Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's the Red Med Originals podcast. Me, Paul Machin, with this man right here, Chris Pajak. How are you doing?
All good, you?
All right.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, seen quite a bit of each other, haven't we?
Absolutely.
Too much, some might say.
Definitely.
Not in terms of time, just in terms of how much.
Let's just move on.
That's why we brought some goods.
Steve Hoard as well. Aaron's not in today because he's definitely seen too much of Steve. How long were you trapped in a Danish airport for?
21, 22 hours, something like that.
Not that you were counting.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I think we got there at 7 PM. Left that. Yeah, 4 PM.
So
yeah,
20, get stuck for 21 hours.
21 hours. Yeah, and it's fine. Yeah, you'll find out why. By the way, keep an eye on the YouTube channel. I'm doing an extra special project, so that's going to be boss. And it was hopefully worth the trip. But yeah, to be fair, I say 21 hours in the Danish airport. Four of those were sat on an airplane that wasn't moving in the Danish airport.
Yeah.
So I was out the terminal for a little bit. It just happened that, yeah.
But that seemed like a heady wild time. It was the hours that followed.
Yeah, it was great, yeah, it was fine.
Remember that time that we got on the airplane and nearly flew? And then
yeah, I felt like back. Tom Hanks in the terminal. It was like I live here now. I'm sure that, yeah, I paid tax at one point. It was crazy. But yeah, it's fine, I'm all right.
Sad. Right, okay. Liverpool beat Newcastle. We're going to talk about
that.
We're going to get our agony rants out the way. And then we're going to look ahead to Liverpool versus Real Madrid as well, because we've got a big old European clash to come. Very exciting. Not strictly a kickoff question, but one something I want to lead into the Newcastle result with. Have you ever seen a funnier goalkeeper error than Nick Pope basically face planting the ball onto the floor, then scooping it into his hands, and then kicking Kieran Trippier as a result?
Yes, but I didn't find it funny.
Yeah, Karius rolling the ball out to Benzema. Yep, there you go.
Sorry,
but it's true. Like, it's, everyone
if you
else...
were if you were the opposition, that is well funnier. If you were just not a fan of Liverpool,
fan
that is well,
well
funnier in the Champions League final.
Okay, yeah. I don't think what he did, the actions that he undertook were
Jordan
as
Pickford
funny
isn't great.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Pickford onto the bar for Origi's up that, there. With, yeah. with
and I think their point is right, is that if you're a rival, blah blah blah. But actually, even so, it's not as funny. The action of it, there are professionals, like professional slapstick comedians, like Jim Carrey could not perform that Nick Pope red card anymore.
It's the kick on Trippier that caps it off.
Imagine if he'd injured them.
Yeah,
like
that's probably what caps it off. Listen, it is really, really funny. I love the fact that, like, that some of the excuses about it, like, you know, he banged his head. Maybe he didn't know where he was, and he presumed he was in the goal again. Like he'd knocked himself out and
got back in time
within a second to get the ball. But it was, I always think, like, absolute goalie shock was like the Karius one. There, every goalie has some of them. Like, you know, Alisson passing the ball to a Wolves player. It's different in a way. I get it, but like they're like brain farts. Nick Pope's. It's, I always think it's funny when it comes on the back of a bad decision and it's someone trying to fix a bad decision.
Yeah.
That's what Pickford's was on the derby. He should have tipped it over the bar, and then by not tipping over the bar and then he didn't do it again, I always like someone like chasing the tail.
Yeah.
I always think they're really funny. And Nick Pope's gone, oh, ball over the top. Oh, it's curling away. Oh, I'm going to have to edit it. Oh, no, I'm on the floor. Oh, no, I'm going to unball it. Oh, I'm kicking me, mate.
It's the ultimate placing increasingly wild bets, trying to cover your losses kind of situation from Nick Pope there, isn't it? Because he goes out, he makes the decision very early that he's going to use his head. Like, I think he's
20 minutes before.
Yeah, when he comes out and uses his head the first time. He's decided that's his approach.
Yeah.
And by God, he's sticking to it, no matter whether the circumstances require it or not. And we've all kind of done that. There are those situations where like a ball gets played across the box and it should be a tap-in, and you've all done that where you miss it because you go with the wrong foot, or you fall over, or you do something stupid because your body's just locked into what it's going to do. But you're right, it's that constant. Like, he's made a stupid decision to head it when it's at foot level. Then he's instinctively seen Mohamed Salah is going past me. I'm on the floor. I can use my hands in this situation. So he's gone and done that. And then, yeah, again, he's folded up by lashing his foot to kick a kid and trip. Yeah, it is. Oh, sheer perfection.
It's up there, isn't it? I mean, it's the, for me, it's when the ball bounces off the floor and hits him in the face. That's the kind of funny that I'm into.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Anything else is irrelevant after that. The fact that I've watched the ball bounce up from the floor and smash his head back is exactly where I'm at.
As a man who spent the pre-match showing me a video of a man falling off a chair and guillotining himself.
Yeah, like, that's exactly what I was looking for that day.
It's funny because like it just shows you how the human body can react when you panic. Like, the not one second as he thought, I'm better off letting this fella score than getting myself sent off and missing the biggest game of my career, or one of the biggest games of my career. In the instinct of pure panic, he's gone, nope, and then you see straight away he's gone, ah, fuck's sake. It was like when, was it Tony got sent off in that Blackburn game for us, and he realised he was going to miss the FA Cup semi-final, and he got himself sent off, and then the realisation on his face, and then we all realised, bloody hell, Brad Jones is playing against Everton next week.
And then Brad Jones nearly got sent off minutes afterwards.
It just felt like, that's like the, I don't feel sorry for him because it was his fault. Like, if it was a dodgy red card that he couldn't appeal, then I'd have felt, I don't feel sorry for him because like he ultimately chose to handball it, but on like, obviously, my plans, you mentioned before, being in the airport. So I landed and turned my phone on, and then I got the WhatsApp groups, and it was the first thing was Ben Kelly writing, does that mean Nick Pope suspended for the final? So I said, bloody hell, their goalie's been sent off. And then I saw the score was 2-0, and then Adam was funny, he went, oh, Salah must have scored the pen. Because you just think, oh, he's gone round the goal, he sends him off. Yeah, like, and it turns out, oh, no, it's much, 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 much more funnier than that. So Aaron gets the clip on his phone and goes, have a little look at that. And I was on the plane just pissing myself laughing because it's the bounce of the ball that whacks him in the face and bounces him up again. That's just really funny.
Chloe, what was the, I mean, obviously he was getting sent off, so there's that reaction in the away end, but
could you see it from the gods?
Yeah, there's a video on our Twitter, and it's me just screaming, it's a red, it's like for like 30 seconds until a red card's in. We didn't see him face plant the ball as much. That was like more up close. We're up in the gods, but it was quite funny. The thing that I really enjoyed about it was he instantly knew it was a red and started walking off. And then for some reason, 3 minutes later, their substitute goalie still hadn't warmed up, and there was a swarm of Newcastle players around the referee. And it's like, it's the most clear red card you're going to get. He's outside the box and he's just clawed the ball outside of the box in his hands away from Salah, who's running through one-on-one. And I'm not bothered if there's a long staff somewhere over there. He's not reaching Mo Salah. It's an open goal. But it was the fact that, like, you thought they'd got a free kick. It was from that Fabinho absolute stupid foul. And you thought, uh-oh, where's danger? And as soon as Ali got the ball, Salah was off. We were all screaming him to do the ball. The ball's done. And lanky old Pope comes out and does that.
He's done. It's really good reading of the game from Pope up until the point where he absolutely pushes the self-destruct button. Like, Alisson kicks at the length of the pitch, and he's bless him.
It's such a good kick, though. It's the fade on the kick that does Nick Pope. Because if that just goes straight, he probably can just nod it out. But I think the point you made earlier was right in that he's decided very early, my go-to tactic, because he's used to playing for Burnley, never move off your line. Sean Dyche wants his goalie on his line, he's like, ah, don't move, and we'll box it off. He's actually been quite good sweeping for Newcastle this year. Yeah.
But he's basically the second best in the league at it after Alisson, I think.
And he's really good, but he does like using his head a lot. And the point, it's like you said before, it's like muscle memory. When you keep doing something, your instinct is just to go there. And like you say, he just falls on the floor.
He did. He tried to clear one in the first several minutes of the game, and it looked nervy the way he did it. I think it was down the right-hand side. Yeah. And it didn't look natural to him when he did it. He looked like he was a bit all over the place. But to try and predict what he did, it was simply incredible. Yeah, it was boss.
That was a highlight of my year, watching that happen, to be perfectly honest.
I actually quite like Nick Pope as well, but still, it's really,
really good. He's a really good goalkeeper as well.
He's fine.
But obviously, you know, he just wants to carry us another guy with destroying everyone else's chances.
I am here all day, and doubtless this will, I'll almost dedicate this entire podcast next week to Loris Karius if he has like a heroic turnaround.
I wouldn't bet on it, to be perfectly honest with you.
No, but...
It's might not even play. He might play the other fella.
Well, there'll be like some the kid or whatever.
No, Gillespie's like 40. He's old.
Really?
But he just never played footy before. Like he is the genuine third, fourth choice goalie.
In this case, it's better than the devil you don't know. Is that what we're saying?
I can't even begin to imagine what would go through Loris Karius' mind in that, because it was bad enough when he turned up at Tranmere in pre-season.
Oh my God, yeah.
He was fucking up before the pre-season game even started.
Yeah. It was bad.
It's the warm up.
Oh, yeah, that time, the lad who was supposed to Liverpool just shouting them in his face, time how shit he was. Like, you got to go. I'm all for the Loris Karius redemption at somebody else and at Man United's expense, but I'm not holding my breath for the Loris Karius redemption at somebody. I mean, Marcus Rashford's eyes like this for me. Get in. But hey, yo.
A knuckle ball from 30 yards as well from God. Rashford.
Punch it in your own net, lad. Come on, do it again. He owes me about £5,000, that man. Honestly, I swear to God. Like, Kiev was like the best trip of my life. And then Karius did that. And I was like, come on. Seriously? He's ain't the best.
Come on, Loris.
Like, I don't care what you say. Yeah, Nick Pope's was hysterical. But to just not realise that someone in white when you're playing in red is literally in front of you and rolling the ball at his leg and it going in. That's outrageous. That is the most stupid thing I've ever seen. But he's got a husky, so it makes up for it, doesn't he? He's got a nice dog, at least.
Yeah, he's very Instagrammable.
He's got
a match next week that's going to interrupt his Instagram making ability.
It's mad that, though, isn't it? Because I don't know how he psychologically gets himself back on side for that. Because he's got a pretty good life.
Well, he has played footy after leaving us. He was for a bit.
Fucking rubbish.
He was awful. Yeah,
because he's crap. He's a fair choice goalie. Of course, he's going to be crap. They're not good.
But I mean, but the thing is, he was never. I know we were not doing this against him, but we had like 3 years of doing this while he was Liverpool's goalie. He was fine. He was an absolutely fine level goalie, but. I don't know that he'll ever be that again. So he's got this nice little life where he's living in England. He's getting paid a decent wage.
He's got Newcastle. A lovely girlfriend.
He's got a lovely girlfriend. Apparently, he's got a lovely
dog,
as
husky,
well,
incredible.
You know? And he's got his Instagram life. I think he's still doing the Twitch streams and stuff. Sound?
He does not need.
I think so. He certainly was. He doesn't need this having to play footy game shit. Let alone having to be the goalie for Newcastle's first chance at winning a silverware in 50 years or whatever. But, like,
he'll be bricking it, won't he?
Yeah.
He'll absolutely. Be absolutely bricking it. I reckon he'll be hoping that he doesn't get the nod.
I wonder.
Get him on the bench.
Do you reckon he was watching that at home? And then, do you reckon he had a moment of realisation of, oh shit.
Probably found out in his WhatsApp group. You're fucking starting. No!
Oh, Nick Pope, no. Oh, it's fine. The Brav could all play. Oh shit. Yeah. He literally played for Man United. Oh, fuck yeah.
We had a super chat in, we've been chatting about this, from Liam Bento, who said that any empathy for Martinez for his goalie's nightmare of a fourth he conceded against Arsenal? None from me, because he's such a weirdo.
He's going to be coming on the next show, I think, a lot.
We'll be doing the Bias Footy podcast after this on Redmen Plus. We will be discussing it, but no, zero empathy for Ernie Martinez.
He might be in the nominations.
Absolute weapon. If you want to go and check out the Biased Football podcast as well, you can do if you sign up on Redmen Plus and use the code BIASED. Is that free?
£2, I think. £2.
Yeah. Anyway, code BIASED anyway on there. I'll tell you more about that later on. Anyway, let's carry on talking about the game. I know, Chloe, we went brilliant from start to finish, and I was still a bit underwhelmed. We really could have done with one more goal, I think, to make everyone just feel better about the whole enterprise. It was just a random conversation I was having with my dad before dinner yesterday. He was like, I'd have liked to see us go more. And he went, with Real Madrid on Tuesday. And I went, oh yeah. I know, obviously, but I think that's an important notion there, is that Liverpool didn't go breakneck speed really during that game. Yeah, we could do with being a little bit tighter. Yeah, we could have been a bit more clinical at the other end. But in the reality of it, if we've got some good legs in the tank and we can do the business against Real, then what a wonderful way to manage 8 or 9 days of footy for Liverpool.
Yeah, 100%. Look, the thing is the most important thing was the win. Why? Because the win breeds confidence, and confidence breeds a run that you can put together, and belief. And these players in the last several weeks have looked like, you know, they're stuck in their own heads. Instead of being confident and going with whatever comes to mind, you know, you make the split decisions in football when you need to push forward and meet the defender, or you need to make that tackle. When you're constantly thinking about the consequences of if you do something wrong, which our whole team decided that they was going to do and feel a bit sorry for themselves, you see how much of a fall off it is. And that split second where you've not made the decision, you've either made a rash challenge or they're in. So winning football games breeds confidence. Confidence makes belief, and it just makes it so much easier to play a football game. You trust each other. You make that decision the split second earlier. And look, I don't care what you say. If you listen to Virgil van Dijk's post-match interview, all he kept saying was, "We're the only team that's beat these. Wow, I'm really, really proud of that. Like, we've beat them twice this season, and we're the only team to beat them at all in the Premier League." So that, don't ever underestimate a 2-0 win against
Newcastle. I think that's just coming on your point, because I was saying this on the night and on the instant match reaction and stuff, is that, you know, look what Newcastle have done when they're focusing on a game that's, you know, in the future. It's so easy to do that. The fact is, they had one shot on target in the second half. That's what it kind of comes down to for me. I think we really managed that game well. And I know there's loads of people there with different opinions, and you're not going to convince me, and I'm probably not going to convince you. But in my head, that game was over on 22 minutes, and it never looked like reigniting. It never looked like we were in a dangerous position. We got minutes into the legs of Harvey Elliott. We got minutes into the legs of Firmino. We got minutes into the legs of Diogo Jota. We were able to take off, was it Henderson and Bajcetic as well? So that's important for me. So being able to manage that game, yeah, we didn't go for it. There's no problem with that. We're not trying to run up the score here.
Yeah.
We're trying to win games of footy, and we're trying to win the game of footy that we're playing and put ourselves in the best position possible for the next game upcoming.
I disagree, though, because I don't think we did manage, especially after the red card at the end of the first half, I don't think we managed well at all. And I did the final word earlier with Sam and Andy, but the point I made was, like, if that red card happens at 0-0, he 100% takes a forward off Eddie Howe. He takes Almiron or Saint-Maximin or Isaac off. But because it's 2-0, he goes, "Well, fuck it, I'll take him a field off and leave two up front." And I don't think Liverpool quite got to grips with the Saint-Maximin part of it. And he's the perfect player to have when you've got 10. Because you just give him the ball and tell him to run and get free kicks or corners or win what he can. And I think Liverpool kind of allowed that to happen a bit too. Like, they hit the bar off a corner. You know what
twice,
I mean? Like,
they
could easily have scored both of those. Our set-piece defending wasn't well, and I think we give too many of them. The only way I felt they were going to score was off a set-piece, and we give them 3, 4, 5 opportunities.
But the good thing we did, though, Steve, right, is that, look, Newcastle are sound. They've got the set-piece thing going for them, and it's all well, we need to improve our set-piece defending.
Yeah.
One of the points I made post-match was that I think that's one of the intangibles we've lost this season with churn of the side. That's the finishing touch to a great team. You get all your stylistic stuff in place. You get your defensive stuff, you get your counter-attacking stuff, you get your possession stuff, and then you work on set pieces on top, and then you're a complete side, and we've lost that. But they've got a brilliant free-kick taker or set-piece taker in Kieran Trippier, so they're always going to be a threat. And our mission really was just to be as tight as possible, because Eddie Howe gives it up. You know, we make the changes and we make ourselves more dangerous, and he goes, "I've got a League Cup final to play here." So all we needed to, I think if we'd gone hell for leather, I think we probably battered them. But I don't think at any point Liverpool decided there was a need to go hell for leather. What we need to decide to, and this is an imperfect approach because we're still not totally stable at the back. But I thought it was encouraging that, I thought generally speaking, I just thought the whole style felt better. And we do this a lot, and I understand why we do it at the moment, is that Chloe's point about Virgil, we've just beaten Newcastle there. It's the first time they've lost at St. James's Park since we beat them last year. People don't really do that against them. If we'd have been beating them in really good form, I don't think we'd bat an eyelid at the fact that the goalie has to make saves, because every goalie has to make saves. But because we're still a bit edgy from having been shit, I think we're hyper-analysing the things that Newcastle did and probably understating all the good stuff that
I just don't did. Think we're great at playing against 10 men full stop. I don't think we ever have been under Jurgen Klopp, to be honest with you. Sam brought up that on the show. Thiago, when he came to make his debut against Chelsea, probably the last time we've played really, really well. The Steve Plum told me before, and I should have checked, I was like, I don't think we've scored a goal playing against 10 men under the club. So I think your point on Howe is right. I think between the red card and like an hour, he thought, we'll give it a go. And if we're not in it, we'll throw the towel in, kind of thing. And that's exactly what he did. And I think from that point onwards, actually, when he, I think it was relatively straightforward. But I don't think Liverpool reacted well from the red card to the half-time whistle.
Yeah.
But they earned the right to get away with that, because this is the point. It wasn't 0-0 when the red card happened and you score two goals. We ripped apart twice, maybe a couple of times, the best defence in the league. And the best defence by a considerable amount. Never mind conceding goals. They don't concede, like, shots, XG, good XG shots. They just don't. They are excellent. They are so well drilled. And Liverpool made the show with them twice through our tactics. And I love the fact that they are goals. They are like goals that have been worked on. I think they are both training ground goals, You talked about Kieran Trippier before. When Trent picks that ball up, he's isolated. He's got Robbo out wide and Nunes to his left as he's looking, and he doesn't know what to do. And he takes the step towards Robertson, and that just leaves Darwin. That's something I think Liverpool have definitely worked on. The second goal is obviously something they've worked on. You know, Salah comes drifting with an exquisite pass. That's where the confidence should come from a Liverpool point of view, and I think we should celebrate that as well. What happened afterwards happened, I get it, but they are two great goals against the team. We don't concede goals, don't concede shots. Against Nick Pope, we've all said it's an excellent goalie. He got nowhere near the first one, and on the second one, Gakpo's first touch takes him out of the game. So that's the encouraging thing to me, is that we scored what you'd say. I'd say in the last couple of games now, we've scored four Liverpool goals. We've seen the counter-attack from the corner. We love doing that. We saw the second goal, Trent's cross back post, someone tapping in. We love doing that. These two as well. It would have been a fifth Liverpool goal, the Alisson kick to Salah, if not for Nick Pope.
Yeah.
So we are starting to see signs of Liverpool becoming Liverpool again, which is really encouraging.
Feels like we've, again, it's just recognisable things about Liverpool, isn't it, Chloe? It's that, and even recognisable, even the difference, but it shows signs that things are being worked on. I think we abandoned, like, bringing Trent more inside. We've clearly started the season, so that was a huge way we were going to play. And we saw a little variation on it, you know, in the build-up to Darwin Nunez's goal, where he hangs back a second, he just sees this big space open in front of him, and he just strolls into it, receives the ball, and then he's got the freedom to pick whatever kind of pass he wants to do. And I think later on in the second half, we saw a similar but different approach with Andy Robertson. He ends up in the centre-forward position because he makes that run inside, whereas Robbo's so good at just tearing down the outside over and over and over again. He totally shakes things up by cutting it. In fact, Trent made that run as well, one when it doesn't quite work out for us. But that's what's been nice about these last two games. It's felt like it's actually been under Liverpool's control rather than we're just throwing a load of stuff at the wall and hoping it sticks. It felt like this is a Liverpool team that had a grip on what was going to go ahead of them.
Yeah, the triangles that we were creating against Newcastle, you could tell that we'd worked on it. And it's quite surprising how what one win against your rivals can do, because that team, I've not seen anything quite like that since Bournemouth, and Bournemouth was a one-off because we beat them 9-0 and they were absolutely crap and Scott Parker left after that. But that was the Liverpool that I remember, and you do see glimpses
it's mad to
of
think
it.
That jumper card thing was this season.
Oh. Rest in peace, that cardigan.
he's doing shite and bruises.
But look, we were vulnerable at times, and that's fair to say. And I think we kind of are going to be that, because that's what we've been like in the past several. So there's still going to be areas that we need to improve on. But it was a much more round performance. We were clinical. We looked sharper. Trent for Darwin's goal, the natural, you know, play of a right back should be to go down the line, to carry on the run, to make the pitch bigger. But what he does, he just realises that the space is actually inside. So I'm just going to wander there. And we obviously, we talked about it a couple of times, is when you trust people too much, we've probably trusted each other a little bit too much, but in a bad sense, where you think, oh, I won't have to come all the way back because he'll make the tackle and he'll win it. Where today, against Newcastle, we trusted each other, but in the right areas and in the right, and we looked so much more confident. We were that much sharper, and it was an unbelievable away day. The atmosphere in the away end was absolutely incredible. And look, you don't want those chances to fall to Vinicius Jr. or Karim Benzema, because they'll put them away. I think Ali made two or three incredible saves, but that's why you go out and spend 75 plus million on the world's greatest.
For me, I love the I love the movement on the front three. I love the interchanging that we're seeing between Gakpo and Nunes at the moment. I love the addition of Salah coming in and being that sort of creator and taking that sort of half space stuff. And that's the thing where you realise that actually they've played a few games together now, and it was something, you know, Thierry Henry was talking about it with Haaland, wasn't he, in the Champions League coverage over last week, about how strikers have to make decisions for the players that they're with. Well, now you can see that Gakpo and Nunes, I think, are making more right decisions for the team that they're playing with and stuff. So I think that's all really good at the moment. The triangles, as Chloe mentioned, I think quite rightly, is we understand who our players are, what they like, and we're trying to do stuff that works for them at the moment. So that's massive. That's really important.
I also think...
Fabinho was boss.
I don't think this is Liverpool's best 11 because it shouldn't be, but it's the best. It's the best balanced 11 we've had all season. It makes sense more because the fullbacks are allowed to go because they've got a little bit more trust. The fact that the midfield three is very defensive minded, you're probably not going to get a lot of goals from it. Although Stefan Bajcetic's half term might prove that wrong, but in general, it looks, the balance of the side just looks better. This isn't like a criticism of Elliot or Thiago. I think they're going to look better in a better team.
Yeah.
We're not that good. We haven't been that good at the moment. In a team that's chasing a league title and Champions League, how good was Thiago when everything's flowing? I think when you have to go a little bit more within yourselves and you are, you know, you're still figuring things out up front. Like, for example, I'm still not quite sure Nunes and Gakpo know how to press very well, which puts more pressure on your midfield, which means they're going to have to do more work. You'd rather that midfield that we had on Saturday, be the midfield to have to do all that kind of work. So the balance of the side just looks a bit better. Whether that's, like I say, in the last two games, it helps that Fabinho and Henderson look like they're getting towards a bit more form. They're really both helped by how good Bajcetic has been as well. It just things that it make, you said a few weeks ago, Chris, and it stuck with me, like, what's the plan here? I don't know what's going on. None of this makes sense. The team that we've seen in the last two games, albeit obviously the centre half changes once, it makes sense. You can kind of see the how
he's
it
not
all fits
flip-flopping
together
anymore. Yeah, my point together at the time was: is Gakpo centre forward or is he left? Yeah, is Harvey Elliott a right winger or a left winger or an eight? He stopped all that. He seems to have exactly what he now knows from the players that are available to him what their best positions are to make a good strong side.
I also think the fact that Bajcetic has moved into eight and been better than he was at six, or as good, which is amazing, really, because, you know, he is. I don't know if he's getting, within Liverpool circles, he's getting a lot of praise, and I've seen bits and bobs about him, but like his start of his Liverpool career, we said it last week, it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's like, it shouldn't be understated how good it's been and how big of an impact, because if you take him out and insert any other midfielder that we've got at the moment, I think we'd all agree, we'd all be a little bit flaky, and be like, ooh, whether it's Elliot or Keita, obviously Thiago now, he's injured, but and you probably have less concerns about Thiago just because how good he is. You say Chamberlain, you say Jones, Milner, any of them, you're thinking, I don't know about that. But because he's stepped up to a level and he's walked in and just been brilliant, he's been our best player for the last month or whatever, other than maybe the goalkeeper. I mean, that's huge. Like, you can stumble upon things sometimes. Sometimes things are happy accidents. Liverpool's right back was a happy accident. You know, Nathaniel Clan got injured. And before we know, oh my God, how good is this lad? And Liverpool have done that quite a few times. Alberto Moreno got injured, and there's Andy Robertson coming through. Sometimes the best laid plans of Mike's men and all that kind of stuff doesn't work. They found something with Bajcetic now. So when everyone else comes back, like you mentioned before, Chris, Nunes and Gakpo being able to play together for a while and other people staying fit around him, he's now playing in a better team and his levels, he doesn't know how to place.
Well, look at Harvey Elliott off the bench. I thought typified what we're hoping to see in the next few weeks is that all our hopes, dreams and expectations shouldn't be on every individual footballer. Players like him should come in and be able to sprinkle some magic on a game. And again, he could come out, you could have two assists and a goal, you know, on another day, in other circumstances.
Jota could score, could have the, he's another one who you're impressed by because, listen, again, he missed and it's a bad miss, but like, the Everton game was just him getting some legs under him. He had an impact on the Newcastle game. If he gets that chance again, he'll score that. Don't worry about him. I think that's another net positive, is that we've been able to, and you, I don't know if the UAM felt the same because I heard you all singing a song, but like, he's loved, and you could just tell he was like beginning to, he looked a bit more Jota-ish. Like I say, he missed a chance and he should score. The second one was almost an unbelievable header, but you can see him now. The groundwork's been laid in place for Jota to go and have a touch to stay fit and have himself a really good end of the season. It's just another, imagine like adding him back into a winning side. The lights just shine. Oh my God, yeah, this is what it's like to have good players off your bench. like I say, you when you're bringing on Jota, Elliot,
Firmino,
Milner, that's I mean, we haven't been able to do that for a while. You know, if you're people bringing four subs on in the last few games, like, with all due respect, Ben Doak was getting on. He's a kid and he's exciting, but he's a kid.
Yeah.
It felt like things are starting to just click back together, which is why we should be optimistic.
The thing I'd say is every single one of them who came on the pitch had a positive impact.
Yeah.
James Milner, up until the last minute, the tackles he was making, absolutely brilliant. Like, probably the biggest cheer of the day was in the final minute when he makes those two tackles and all the way, and there's like, oh my God, get in! And it's like, all he's done is tackle someone, but like, it just got you up. The big difference I'd say with Jota and Firmino is the pressing and how well we press them when those two came on. That's two lads who have been integrated into the side, obviously, because they've been under Jurgen Klopp, but know exactly what they want and when to press.
So Bravka shit himself, didn't he, when Jota was running that? I mean, like, oh, bloody hell.
Well, you forget, don't you? Because Jota still feels new to me.
Yeah.
But he's not. You know, he's been there. He's well part of this team. Yeah. I mean, he comes in the COVID season. He comes into the.
He had a lot of minutes last season as well. Like, a lot of minutes. He was almost there. We did a show on how many minutes everyone had done a couple of weeks ago for deep dive, and he's in our top 10. Like, he's the third forward last season, which I kind of just forgot that.
He was always
in the side when he was fit.
Because he's brilliant. Yeah. I'll tell you what, he'll be back in the side when he's fit. Gakpo or Nunes are going out this team sooner rather than later for him. I don't know when it'll be. It might even be tomorrow, but like, he's sensational. And like, I wish he'd have scored it I hope he's saving it because I thought this, it's hard to say, someone had a really good game when they missed a sitter from a goal I might have scored. But in general, I thought his half an hour was so encouraging because, like Chloe said, we went up a gear again and we were 2-0 up at Newcastle and we were cruising. And I get we were against 10 men. And I know Firmino nearly shits the bed on one occasion. But in general, we went up another level. And I go back to the end of last season. We were winning games off the bench because we were having a front three on the pitch and two of them were interchanged. So often, you know, if it was Diaz, Jota, Salah or Diaz, Jota, Mano, whatever it was, Firmino comes on and Jota comes on, or you know, you're coming to change it. We're there now, and obviously we're pretty much back. We're 2 or 3 weeks away from having all six of them available. That's going to be something.
What we're
special.
Doing with Nunes is what Jota does anyway. When you play him on the left for Liverpool, he's a guy who loves to be between the width of the 6-yard box, so he naturally engages into those positions.
And Gakpo likes going out there, so it makes sense.
Exactly. So, you know, it was something I talked about, that those mid-season friendlies, that you were seeing a little bit of the interchange with Diaz and with Firmino and what have you. You more Firmino drifting out, but again, it's taken a little bit of while to get up to speed on that, but that makes perfect sense. What are we doing differently? It feels like the season's finally started. It's mad, and I can now see what it is they've been working on. It doesn't look like a load of bollocks. That's just like, oh, fuck it, this will just work if we just keep doing it over and over again. This feels like a culmination of stuff that's been worked on all of a sudden, and I can see how Bobby Firmino, whether he signs a contract or not, I can see him having a nice little. A great little role to play between now and the end of the season, knitting things together as he does, bringing the likes of Gakpo along. But I could foresee a world where Jota's not starting games, but he's coming on for half an hour and scoring, and then he'll do 60 the next game and score. But then Nunes comes on and he scores because he's full of all pace and running and all that. It's exciting.
There's a world. Really, really exciting. And we didn't have this last year. We had the front five, and listen, as a five, they were incredible. But there's a world, we didn't really trust number six. And so it was Minamino and Origi, we were good players, but this six as a six should be better than that. There's a world where you could go Salah, you could start Salah, Nunes and Gakpo, and then on an hour go, right, all off, Firmino, Jota, Diaz, have half an hour to run at tight. Like, that's what five subs is going to allow you, potentially allow you to do. That's hugely encouraging, like I say, it caveats on everyone staying fit, which you haven't been able to do. But that's where, again, you can see Liverpool, if we're going to go on this type of run where everyone, I think, other teams and other fans are probably more with what Liverpool go on this run. We've been quite pessimistic about us being able to do that. That's where you can see it happening because though having a front six with six like really high quality players, no one else really got that. That's hard to do really. Even, you know, City to an extent have got it, but they still look heavily reliant on the main fella up front.
Yep.
Just happens that he scores fucking every week.
I was looking at the goals that the top challenges in the league have got. Because we were doing one of the sponsored shows this Monday morning, and they're asking about Rashford, and like Man United have got him, and then Bruno Fernandes is their second top goal scorer, and then they've got nothing.
You know what I mean? They've got dribs and drabs and bits and pieces underneath that. You've got Man City, you've got Erling Haaland, and then Mahrez, I think, is their next... Foden's their next highest league goal scorer underneath that, and Mahrez is ticking around. But again, they've not spread the goals out at all. Tottenham, it's all Harry Kane. Benton Kerr's, I think, their second highest goal scorer, and he's injured for the rest of the season. Son's coming back, it's a goal scoring form, which will help that. We've got the spread. We're like Arsenal. We've got a good spread, but we haven't scored enough volume within that spread. You know, I know Firmino's still our second highest goal scorer in the league, but it's obviously Salah, Firmino. You've then got a point where Darwin Nunes got six, I think. He's starting to tick along. The fact that Gakpo's now got two, other than I can see a world where he might get six or seven by the end of the season. And then we've got three, four, five players that are all scoring a good, solid volume of goals, all spread out. That's...
Jota will score goals if he stays fit as well,
exactly,
100%.
Exactly. And if that's the case, that's how we're well better placed. Not literally, because of how bad the season started, but in terms of if you wanted to back a team to be beyond just, we'll just get fourth, we've probably got enough there. If we get a little bit more luck than we've had on the injury side of things, certainly. But it's well encouraging.
Can I just say, you mentioned then that opposition fans probably feel like Liverpool can go on a run more than Liverpool fans. And I think that's so important, because we mentioned confidence earlier and what winning can do for us, but what it does to the opposition. The reason that they used to always hate Liverpool was because we found a way every week. And they'd look at the schedule and go, oh my God, not these. If they now think... Right, well, good God, Liverpool are coming behind us here. They've came out of nowhere. One of the worst seasons they've had under Klopp. You know, people were thinking they were going to be closer to the relegation zone than they were to top four. And all of a sudden, we start creeping up. It doesn't just affect the players on the pitch. It affects the opposition that you face and the way they set up and
Newcastle,
how they do it.
You want to make Newcastle really regret not killing us, do they, don't you? Yeah. Like, that's the thing. They had a chance to end our top four hopes. You know, they did. And it was gone in 23 minutes, like I said before. Tottenham were desperate. I know Newcastle are closer to Tottenham in the league. Every Tottenham fan would have been desperate for them to beat us. And then it becomes a two-horse race between Newcastle and Tottenham. And then Tottenham, I fancy the chances in that. In general, they've been there before, Newcastle, haven't you? I think by that they'll be regret. We want to make them regret not stamping on our edge. You
the
know
psychology issues, which is what you're saying there, Clau, is right now it's actually shifted. Everyone thinks they can beat us.
Yeah.
So I think that's actually benefited us in some regards. We're just telling by, you know, a few more counter-attacking goals, we look a little bit sharper going the other way all of a sudden. But what will happen is, eventually that will wear off and we'll go back to being... More teams will start sticking men behind the ball. But I'm convinced we bought in the summer, and obviously going back to Diaz last January, because that's what most teams do against us. And this was a weird season where obviously injuries undid us and not bolstering in the areas we should have done, blah, blah, blah. But loads of teams have just thrown themselves at us this season, and we've really struggled with that. Whereas I think as legs start to go, as the season progresses, more and more teams are just going to get deeper and deeper. And then all of a sudden, Thiago's going to come back into this team and we're going to have five lads who can all do completely different things in front of goal. And I feel, again, this is just two wins. I feel like we're quite well equipped. We're happy if teams want to keep trying to pummel us because they think they can get something of us. Great. We'll sit back, we'll soak it up and we'll smash it on the counter. But if the circumstances change, I no longer actually feel too worried about that, because that was our big plan, was how do we cope against teams who want to shut us down?
And people crack under pressure. That's where mistakes come. You can sit in a low block, but if we keep moving you about around the 60-minute mark, you're going to get at least a little bit tired. And that's how we used to do it. We used to just make people so tired, because we obviously... We're not Manchester City in the way that we move the ball constantly, but we keep hold of possession. And when you win it, we win it off you instantly with high up the pitch, and you've got to get back. If they start sitting deeper, the deeper and deeper and deeper they get, the more chance there is for them to crack and the more chance there is for individual errors to come in. And you've seen that because Joe Gomez, all of our centre-halves, our midfielders, whenever you've put us under pressure, we've cracked and you've got at us. And potentially we can do that. And I'm not saying that we can go on a 10-game winning streak, but, you know, there's lads there who have done it. And if teams start not fearing us, because I don't think they'll proper fear us, but think if they see Liverpool on the schedule list and think, oh, I can't really be bothered with this, you know. And they change tactics a little bit, or they don't feel as outrageous to come after us, then that could benefit us as well. So it's a start, it's a base, it's a foundation, and let's hope we can get somewhere.
Just going back to what you were talking about before, Paul, about like the, you know, I think it was you when we were talking about Firmino and Jota coming on and how they pressed. Maybe it was Steve, I can't remember now, apologies.
It was me.
It was
the other one.
Honestly.
Somebody on the show said something.
33.3% chance.
And I got it completely wrong twice. So what's that chance?
Oh, multiply 33.3 by 50 and yeah, there you go.
So well,
1,000% chance of getting that right and you still got it wrong.
It's like, it is what it is. You notice how the midfield stepped up to it though as well, because obviously it comes off the forwards, doesn't it? So they know if Gakpo and Nunes are there and they're maybe not as good, that they can't commit to that press either. But what's good is that the knowledge is still there. The players still understand how to do it. So as soon as Jota and Firmino come on the pitch, the midfield, they're like, right, well, we know they're going to do it. So now we're going to do it and we're going to win the ball high up the pitch and stuff. That's boss, because it's been a concern that the midfield weren't able to do it. And actually, it might not have been the case all along.
Couple of things. Sorry, Steve, we need to move on. But yeah, good stuff. Our topic continues. We're going to do Real Madrid in a minute. We had a super chat from Nader Cafel. He said, predictions for Madrid. And where is Carvalho? Carvalho is, unfortunately, Klopp talked about him, didn't he? He said, like, he must be a bit annoyed because he's not playing, but he's a good player, he's young, we you know, yeah, he'll be fine. And we'll do Madrid very shortly, but just to move things forward on this, so obviously in terms of the Premier League and what it means for us, Newcastle down into fifth. So obviously we talked a lot about how we've got to catch Newcastle. The gap is down to 6 points.
They're still the driving seat for me. They're the ones I've got my eye on,
and a game in hand on them. What is interesting though is that by the time, if we win our next two league games, we'll be level on points with Newcastle, because we play twice before they kick a ball again in the Premier League, which is really interesting. Yeah, exactly that. So they've got the Man United EFL Cup final game next Sunday. They then play Man City away on the 4th of March, where
a lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Is Liverpool, as we well know. I've got Real Madrid this week, but then play Crystal Palace away and Wolves at home on the first of March. So, yeah, it could very much be Liverpool putting it on Newcastle's toes by the time that comes around.
On the top one as well, it's interesting with them. Very quick. I hope we go back to it. It's not going to win us a cup, but remember when Alisson save against
Napoli
when you look back at that as the one that went and won us the European Cup. You look back at the Almiron save and you think, if Liverpool end up getting top four, and who knows what they go on to next season, if that allows them to sign X amount of players. That's a real sliding doors moment, because we were inches away from being 1-0 down in 5 minutes again. And it's one of those things where I'm wondering, are you going to go look back on that? And a Tottenham and Newcastle are going to look back on that themselves and go, I fucking wish Almiron would have scored that.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that's the pressure, I think, us being Liverpool and the manager and the players and the track record of doing it. if you're Newcastle or Spurs, I think you are looking over your shoulder. You're not worried about anyone else. I think they're both worried. They're not worried about each other. I think they're both worried about us now.
Yeah, and the other note to mention, the Spurs thing, we're 7 points behind Spurs at the moment with two games in hand on them. So like Liverpool,
and they've got to come to Anfield.
Yeah, and Liverpool are very, and that's another thing. I don't know the exact figure on this, but I'm pretty sure we've played all but one, I think, of the teams in and around us and above away from
home. It's only City. We haven't been to City. So yeah. Everyone from 1 to 8, we've been away and we played away. I mean, we haven't won many of them.
But we've
beat Spurs away, we beat Newcastle. But yeah, they've all got to come to Anfield, which is...
Can I ask, it's none of our business, but how many points off Spurs are they from United?
Spurs are seven behind Man United.
Okay.
That's so free,
Man United are none of our business at the moment, but they're in a great run of form. We talked about it, and we'll talk about them on the Bias Footy pod. But and again, City, Arsenal, United, none of our business right now. But it's a long, mad season, and you know you're going to need a huge helping hand. But really, we just need to win. Let's win those next two games and see what it looks like. Palace away is a tricky one, although we've managed to get a reasonable grip on that in recent years. And Wolves for the bazillionth time, God, who knows how that game's going.
We can't be playing Wolves again.
Believe it or not.
Wolves, Brighton. What we need to do, speaking of Brighton, is we just need to get Fulham and Brighton out of the way. You know what I mean? Get above them, and then it's a 4th, 5th and 6th battle kind of thing.
Yeah.
We're talking about this, like Liverpool, we need to earn the right to be in it.
Yeah.
And that's the next job.
Our next four in the league: Palace away, Wolves at home, United at home, Bournemouth away. And that's how you, if you win those first two games, you start to close the gap on fourth. And then, hey, listen, if you're then able to take 3 points off Manchester United, there's still none of your business. But I think that's the point where you're starting to look at third. As well as looking at third, fourth, rather than fourth, be your total ambition. But the three, I mean, we've got a Champions League game and we've got two big league games before then. But it's just nice to be sat here for the first time pretty much all season. Apart from that, just before the break for the World Cup, thinking, I feel like we're back on track. I feel like the players know what they're doing. Everyone's singing from the same.
It felt like you're driving to London and you've hit a 50 mile an hour zone. This is this Liverpool season, by the way. You've hit a 50 on the 62. You've gone down all those horrendous 50 zones on the frigging M6. You've just decided to pay your £6 to go down the toll road, and it's just clear sailing now. And that's you can either hoof it or you can put it in cruise control for a bit. That's what it kind of feels like at the moment, doesn't it? It's just been horrendous the first half of the season.
There's
yeah.
a chance that season came down to tomorrow's game, whatever happens against Madrid, and hopefully it goes well. But like, if we'd got 6 points in those Newcastle and Everton games, the season was literally Madrid or nothing. Whatever happens in the Madrid tie now, we've at least given ourselves a chance where, and again, it's not where we want to be. We want to be in a title race, not a top four race. But the season isn't just a complete write off.
Yeah.
They've earned that by getting two very hard four victories.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely. Good. More of them, please, Liverpool. Right, very short break from us. We've got a boss competition for you guys. And then we're going to do an agony rant and preview in Liverpool versus Real Madrid.
Hey, guys, how would you like to get your hands on this? It is a 13-14 Liverpool home shirt signed by former Reds defender Martin Skirtle. If you want to be in the prize draw to win this very shirt, all you got to do is head on over to redmenplus.com and sign up as a Club Legend subscriber. You'll get access to all that amazing content, both in video and podcast form. But yeah, by signing up as a legend, you get loads of added perks and benefits as well, one of which is entry into the monthly prize draw. And at the end of February, we were doing that draw and giving away this, yeah, Martin Skirtle signed shirt. Make sure you're in the hat, redmenplus.com, and become a Club Legend today.
Hey, welcome back to the Red Men Originals podcast. Video viewers will be wondering why Chris Pajak is here in name but not in body, and podcast listeners would never have known. So we'll just crack on for now. It's gone for a week. We'll crack on. Agony rant. Chloe, anything doing your head in this week?
Referees.
Okay.
Oh my God, yous are all absolutely shambolic. The guy who resigned, who just quit,
Lee Mason. Yeah. Well, we made Lee Mason quit.
Yeah, yous all need to follow suit. Yous are absolutely dreadful. Do you want to come in? I'll shut up for a minute. Go on.
There's no camera that's not going to be...
There you go. No one knows this one.
Nailed it. Perfect.
It's funny because, like, we talked about Darwin before, we're going to speak about him in the shoulder in a minute. He got given a foul.
No, against him, yeah.
When he got wellied and landed on his head. Mo Salah gets taken out on it. Yeah, refs are shit.
Howard Webb has basically decided to tell all referees, just let everyone get
just martial law.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And his solution is let everyone Saka get wellied.
Got the shit kicked out of all game.
Did no one see the bits of red card and he walked away without even a yellow? There was nothing in sight.
Referees are morons, unfortunately. But I did see a tweet, and I can't remember who it was from, but this idea that get rid of him, he's crap, as though there's like a fresh
a
batch
person,
of really
yeah.
good ones waiting in the wings to come up. These are the best, and we keep basically tearing these ones down.
Just give us the Champions League ones, aside from the English referees.
No, that fella's who's the lunatic guy?
The Spanish guy, is it? Them are all lunatics, my God, I've had enough of referees in this.
Anything to rant about this week, Chris?
No.
Good.
Two wins on the bounce ball. There's absolutely nothing to rant about anymore, is there?
No, I agree.
It's great.
The ownership situation's perfect.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. Everybody takes things too seriously. Ask my wife. This is how I deal with when she's wound up about stuff. If people get super, super, super angry about things that are outside of their control, then I just find that really funny, because there's no point in getting really wound up about things that you can't control. Worrying about the future is like trying to solve algebraic equations by chewing bubble gum. Not my words, Steve. The words of
some nerd.
Baz Luhrmann, Sunscreen. Chloe, listen to that song, because you'll learn more from life. You'll never act on any of the things that he tells you, but he's right about everything he says in that song.
I'd rather not waste.
Take care of your knees.
Moments in my life.
You'll miss them when they're gone.
Fucking hell, shit, that.
The best. Every word he says is utter perfection. Anyway, anything to rant about?
Not Liverpool related, no. All good.
Good.
Oh, no, mine wasn't Liverpool related. Mine was just...
To be fair, it was half Liverpool related, because... Again, Newcastle tried to boot the shit out of us.
Mo Salah got snapped by Dan Byrne. Nah, not on.
Slightly funny as well. Not in terms of them crapping all over us and not giving us anything, but more like just how bad they are and they're the best of the best. Mm. I mean, some person's had to leave by mutual consent. He's being that garbage. And
no, we bullied Lee Mason out of a job last week on the bias footy.
Oh, also, I've got one little rant. Can Fabinho stop sitting on the floor and looking at refs to send them off? He is desperate. Yeah. He is so desperate to be sent off. Stop it. Get up and go. So Brighton game and that one the other day. I was like, he's begging to be sent off. He's like bracing for it. Yeah, he needs to stop doing that.
I think he was a bit better that time. I think he was a bit laughing. He was laughing. He knew how badly late he was on that one. And he knew it was accidental. Whereas the one the other week, he was like, oh, I am so crap. I'm sorry. Just send us off. Do everyone a favour. Put me out of my misery, mate. Where is it? I loved it because we had an argument to Park about it on the watch along. Where Joe Dennison goes, you blew the whistle, ref. You blew the whistle. Like, what the fucking, like, decked you after the whistle? Like, it's still assault, isn't it? Like, oh, yeah. So good on you, Jordan, for trying your best to get that one, that yellow card overturned. Yeah. But
someone needs to just go over and pick him up. Just get him off the floor. Yeah. It's easier to send the fella off when he's sitting down. Because he's massive, isn't he? Quite intimidating.
Oh, yeah.
Get off the floor and just walk away, mate, because you're just begging to be sent off.
Right, let's talk Real Madrid. Then, I kind of mentioned, Chris, 9 days ago, probably, you know, eight days ago, we were looking at Liverpool's run of fixtures and going, God, there's a world where we lose the derby here, and then, God, what happened? Newcastle are flying hard, the best defence in the league, and then Real Madrid, Jesus Christ, on the horizon. It's kind of mad that we're here. I can't really wrap my head around the fact that this is a huge, huge game of football. It's so close, and I feel really confident. A weird word. I'm just really excited.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you should be. This is when Champions League ties matter, isn't it? You know, I think every year we go into the Champions League thinking that these nights are going to be amazing on the lights, and every year the three home games are always slightly underwhelming because it's not the business end of the season. It does just matter more when it comes to this side of things. And you know, Real Madrid, I think just the name, it evokes emotion in you as a fan. And I think what Spain Kop did for the you know, the potential last derby was cannot be understated. You know, getting that flag day back and being able to carry that momentum on into the Real Madrid match and them calling for it again. That's the type of stuff that sets us apart, isn't it? That's the type of thing that can make us win a game of football. And the tie won't be over no matter the score. Like, you know, Barcelona can attest to that.
Yep.
And Champions League ties, obviously, we know about it as well. But we can put our best foot forward in this game, and that's what I'm looking forward to, getting in there, singing loud, being a Liverpool fan, being with other Liverpool fans and being able to support my side. There's nothing better than doing that.
I agree with that. And that's, again, just to mention that, as Chris points out, the Spain Cup guys are calling for another flag there. They want it bigger and better against Madrid. So if you are going to that game, you are going to be in the cup. In fact, if you're just going to be in Anfield and you've got an old flag or whatever, you know, maybe it's not...
Bring your scarves.
Actually, bring something to shake around your head, to hold up and bring your singing voices as well. And get your, more of it from me, get your calm straight. So help people across the street. If someone needs help reaching sort of a high shelf in a supermarket or conversely a low shelf, whatever, help people during the day. Make sure you've done all your good deeds, you know, tidy your room for your mum or whatever. It goes to you, that clown. And make sure...
It's not happening.
Get your calm straight, Chloe. No.
I'll tidy my own room for myself. There you go.
Okay, so... interesting squad.
How does selfishness work out for Karma? Do you know?
Bad, Chloe.
Hey, I made sure a kid got back to the coach the other day. I lifted, yeah. No, I've done some stuff every weekend.
Whatever you do, make sure you do something. If you're not going to do that, do something else.
I'll take the dogs for Tuesday. A walk. There you go. Well done, dogs.
But you didn't have a dog. Thought you wanted one for Christmas.
No,
I'm going into that again. Stay. Encouraging squad news. Cruz Tchouaméni. Look like they've not travelled, which is, I mean, look, they'll just find some other box players to put
Camavinga.
In there.
Camavinga, Valverde,
they've got options.
Modric. They're fine. They've been. Danny Ceballos played the other day. He's back involved after his little Arsenal trip. Yeah, they're brilliant. Don't get like they're two very good players. Don't get me wrong. That's understating it. They're two excellent players. But yeah, if you lose your many, you can throw Camavinga in. You're not doing too badly. The thing with Madrid is right, and it's weird, like because. They're away form in this competition. They didn't, you know, they lost in Leipzig. They drew in Shakhtar. Well, it wasn't obviously against Shakhtar. It was in the neutral country, of course. But like, they're not infallible. But like Chris's point, right? And this is why I actually don't think it's going to be a good game. I think it's going to be a great occasion. I think they might just nullify it a little bit because they're right. There's no result that they're not going to be comfortable going back to the Bernabeu with, you know, unless it's something absolutely outrageous, cricket score. Roma style or something, even then, you know, 3 goals, they probably back themselves. They're so streetwise. And this is if you're looking at, I'm excited for the game. There are certain teams who sometimes you just feel I've got your number, and your job is to go and take to prove them wrong. They just think it's Liverpool again. And it's like when we play Everton, we just play Everton.
Yeah.
More often than we're going to win. They probably think that with us, you know, whether it's been finals.
They think that with everyone.
And it's Real Madrid. And right, they've earned it. You know, they win this competition all the time. They're amazing at what they do. They're never beaten, I know. So they've got some quality players. They're going through a bit of a transition, but they're doing it so well. They've just, I say found players, but like the young crop to add to the experience is unbelievable. Valverde is just
incredible.
Out of this world, how good he is at the moment. And then, whether it's Benzema, Rodrigo, or it's
Vinicius Junior.
They're just exceptional.
Eden Militao, Rudiger, Alaba. It's just...
You know where I get confidence from? Man United going to the new camp. I get confidence from that. Because Barcelona are miles better and didn't deal with it. Now, I know Real Madrid have got the European experience that they can draw back on in recent seasons, much more so than Barcelona. But that gives me confidence.
I back us at Anfield against anyone. And what we need to do, You say, oh, second leg, go to the bear. I don't know if we want to be going to the bear or having to win. That's hard. So I think if you can, there is a chance where you can just blitzkrieg them. And I wonder if Jürgen, have we still got that in us? You know, the real Man City, Roma performances, the bar. Have we got that in? Has this Liverpool got it in them? Because if it has, that's a challenge for everybody. But
what we may be looking for, and again, it depends how the first leg goes, but. Might be a Bayern Munich style situation. I actually don't mind too much. I'm not sure we're necessarily ready to do a toe-to-toe kind of game of footy, but we might be able to. It depends on what Real Madrid are going to do. Are we going to try and set up, you know, we're going to play our style, we're going to do our thing, or are we going to be a bit cannier and say, go on, you score and we'll just try and hit you on the counter-attack? That might be the smart way to play these. And again, particularly, means you don't necessarily need to batter them at Anfield, and you can probably handle a world where they're going to throw everything at you at the Bernabeu no matter what happens. And if, you know, that's one of those games where, fingers crossed, we've got a few weeks, hopefully Nunes will be back for this, but you want him around and you'd want Jota around in it's like 3 weeks.
And Diaz might be back for that one. Yeah, Diaz might be back for that one. The worry, I suppose, is that when we go negative before we go positive again, is like we've never really solved the Vinicius problem. that's a worry for me, is like, how do we react to that? Because I don't think we can just ignore it. I don't think we're good enough at the moment to just, we'll be us and you be you and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
I think that, I don't know if we can do that. So obviously, like, the other day it was Ceballos behind, behind Vinicius, but he is so clever. There is something about him. Like, I think he's the one who we need to be most worried about. They've got brilliant players. Listen, any of them can score. They've got literally the Ballon d'Or winner. So I understand what I'm talking about a little bit. But, like, he's the worry for me is the Vinicius problem. How are we going to solve that? What do we do? Can Trent and Henderson and probably Joe Gomez on that right-hand side between them manage to do it, whether Matip comes back in or not? I don't know. I probably think maybe not at this moment in time. So I do think that's the area of concern for me. There are areas you can get where you can score goals against them, but then you can get at them. But I think Liverpool need to figure out first, because I go back to it again. What you don't want to be, you don't want to be out of tie in 20 minutes, because we've been 2-0 down against fucking Wolves and Brighton. Like, the Real Madrid, they can smell weakness and they'll go for it.
I'd rather have Real Madrid in around the 16 than in a Champions League final. That's the thing.
Two legs help you, of course it does. But
so third time lucky.
It's the what do you think? I'll ask you, because I know you're into the tactics a little bit more than me. You know, understand these things, but like that right back left wing problem is something that Liverpool's done okay with.
I was going to say the Vinicius thing. He's a great player, but I don't think he's armed us any more than some of the dross that have fucking good games against us. To be honest with you,
he's better. Of course he
is. But like, he was better in the Champions League semi final than he was in the final last year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it's overstated how well he played in the Champions League final. I think we did a decent little job on him, to be honest with you. Clearly a boss player, clearly absolutely brilliant, clearly a concern going into the game. But they've got weapons all over the pitch. That's the big thing. And I'd be more inclined to see, how are we going to get the best out of Mo Salah against Madrid? Because that's something we've not seen. You know what I mean? That's what I'd be focusing our efforts on.
Who did they have at left back? Alaba, okay, yeah. Sounds. They tried to put Camavinga as left back for a couple of weeks, but obviously with Tchouaméni out, Camavinga will slot into midfield. I'm just excited. I haven't even thought about losing this game of football, if I'm being perfectly honest with you.
You can do your head in with it. And I put the title about it being a revenge mission. How many times can we say we're having revenge against Real Madrid? But it'll be true until we finally fucking do it. And I feel a little bit
every
more confident.
Every team's got revenge mission with Madrid. That's what being the best team in the world is.
Yeah. What I would say on the Salah thing, you're right, Chris, is also Rüdiger does really well against Mo Salah. For Chelsea, he's been really good against them in that he's happy to go out wide and get in there. So it'll be interesting to see like that side of the pitch. How we cope.
They had Alaba, Rüdiger, Militao and Nacho as their back four in the game at the weekend against Osasuna. Ceballos, Camavinga, Modric, Vinicius Junior, Rodrigo and Valverde up front. So yeah, good. But
Alaba in because, is it Mendy?
I think he is out.
But I like your general notion about this, and I think you can do your head in sometimes, you know, an head in by overanalyzing the stuff. You know, these are the team who are 8 points behind Barcelona in the chase for the La Liga title this season. You know, look, I'm about to make a point how we're going to be capable of beating them where we've been mid-table for the last, you know, month of the season. So it doesn't necessarily all stack up, but it goes to the point they're not at the peak of their... Exactly. This is not a sensational Real Madrid side. It's not necessarily a sensational Liverpool side, but the best thing that could have happened to us, weirdly, and I'd never have chosen this 3 months ago, 4 months ago, is to have this game first at Anfield. I think in terms of our redevelopment, the best thing that could happen for us is to play at Anfield first. I think if we've won two games and then you go on the Bernabeu, you run the risk of undoing what you've done. Whereas I like this idea of, right, we've had two good results, everyone's feeling more positive around it, get it to Anfield, get the flags waving, get everyone behind it, see if we can get a result. And then we'll worry about the Bernabeu when we get there. We've got three games for that game to matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, also, exactly. I think it's been like, I keep saying, I keep doing this against Real Madrid, I keep finding ways to be positive and they keep shooting us down. But like, they haven't played the Jürgen Klopp's Liverpool at Anfield with fans. You know, like that they haven't. And that's one thing that we maybe that can be a point of difference. I don't know, obviously.
Yeah,
the Brendan Rodgers Real Madrid, they wiped the floor with us at full Anfield. But then obviously since then, a couple of finals and then obviously the COVID season when it was behind closed doors. So maybe that's a factor, but the flip, mate, the fucking Real Madrid, like, I don't think that would bother them, but you never know. It might galvanise us a little bit.
I'm sorry, but of course it bothers everyone.
Like, there's no, if atmosphere matters, you know what I mean? And, and you know, you can say, oh, well, you know, they're a really experienced team and blah, blah, blah. It happens. I've seen, like, this Liverpool team at the peak of its powers a couple of seasons, I've seen us go to good grounds and be a little bit shocked by it when the crowd really gets on top. It is a thing. You know, again, Barcelona had Messi and Suarez and, you know, Busquets still hasn't tweeted since he's so shell shocked at having played Liverpool at Anfield. So
Man City lost their heads before they'd even kicked a ball, before they came out. Why? Because the atmosphere. And the thing about this game is
new
that,
to them though, isn't it? Well,
yeah, obviously. They don't have to, you know.
Full stadium's wild.
The thing is that Real Madrid, you always know, was going to be a really tough game. Get it out the way. If you beat them, you've got a really good chance. And once again, if you put down a marker against this Real Madrid side at home, there's more confidence. You then go to the Bernabeu and you think, right, let's just keep it tight. Let's do what we can. And I've seen teams crack when they have to look at that cop and see what is there. And I'm, you know, these are well experienced players, but you hope that we can have some sort of effect. And like you said, 10 days ago, I'd be absolutely, if this game would have came up, I'd have been like, nah, can't even be bothered. Just get it over and done with, please. Now I literally cannot wait for tomorrow night. And yet we might get battered because Liverpool haven't proven at any point this season that they can, you know, win games back to back to back. But I'm gonna do everything I can in my power in the ground to help us out and get
us over. I think what we need to do also is like stop shooting ourselves in the foot.
Yeah.
Like they will punish you. I mean, the worst teams have punished us. You can't give Real Madrid just easy goals or, you know, silly mistakes. Make them, if they beat you, make them have to properly work for it. Because the worry is their approach. Are they going to decide, you know what, let's just get them back to the Bernabeu and we'll beat them? Or do they go, these are a bit crappier and they've got a soft underbelly, and listen, if Miguel Almiron puts the ball 1 inch to the left, they're down 5-0 again. They're down in 5 minutes again. Madrid might be thinking maybe we can go and quiet Anfield down. There's two ways to quiet us down, or is score early, or just keep the ball and just bore us to death.
Bullshit, though. Sorry, it's not to over a point. If they do that, more fuel them. Take the ball off us at Anfield, all the best. That's when the atmosphere is almost the best.
You say that, mate, but eventually
by an absolute mile. The worst thing is when we've got the ball and we're trying to break a team down. That's how you kill the Anfield atmosphere.
Look at Chelsea 13-14. Yep. They let us have the ball, and you can't keep that anger up when your team's got the ball. Because and Mourinho, that was part of his plan in that season, was to give Liverpool the ball because you can't stay angry. When they've got the ball, you can stay fucking angry and focused.
You know what I am interested to see is the matchup between Carvajal and Nunes, if he does play on that left-hand side. Because I thought Diaz against Carvajal in the final, oh yeah, absolutely a bit of that. But Carvajal really shut down Luis Diaz.
He did. Matchup played the other day, didn't he, as well?
But Nunes, chaos, absolutely. Like, I'm excited to see that.
I'd be shocked if he starts, Clodo, now. After that shoulder, I think that's the next question, I suppose, is if he can't go.
Depends what it is. If it's muscular, you just give him an injection.
If he can't go, then what do you do?
I would go Jota. Yeah,
same. With a view of getting Bobby on.
I don't know about Jota, personally.
What's the other options, though? It's Bobby.
Beppo on the left and Bobby up top is probably... I think Bobby's who I would start in this game anyway.
Ahead of Gakpo?
Ahead of Gakpo, yeah. Not irrelevant of whether Nunes starts, Bobby gets the nod for me.
Because he can hold the ball better.
Yeah, I just think he can link everything up. He can press a little better for us, understand it and all that type of stuff. That's where I would go. Then the Nunes thing and the Jota thing then becomes, hang on, you've got two lads who probably can't go through 90 starting.
Yeah.
So you've got to make a decision on how many of these forwards can I afford to not, I can only play 60 minutes.
If Nunes can't play, I don't think Bobby can play. Because you're right.
That's what I mean.
Because Gakpo's got to start. Yeah. So that's a bit of a blow. You're right. I think I'd be starting Jota. I'm the opposite of you. Even if everyone was fit, I'd have Jota centre forward. I think he's more likely to score a goal.
I think it's interesting that Jota's been coming on the left. I think that's where we'll use him until Diaz is back, and then we'll work out what's going on after the fact. The fact is, he's just as good left as he is central.
I'd rather him central, like, I won't lie, but I can see.
It's more that Bobby's got one position. That, yeah. And I think everyone else has got two.
So I think if you've got Bobby's back and fit and available, then
it feels like at the moment Gakpo and Firmino, your centre forwards, and then everyone else is playing on a flank. Yeah. When Diaz comes back, he plays right or left, because yeah. he's the only one who can do both.
Yeah.
Really well. It's a fair point. Jota out right.
Jota can do a bit of it.
I don't think he's suited as good on the right, but he definitely can do it. If we're in a world where they're all fit, all five of them, obviously without Diaz, I still think I'd play Jota, and I will play him up front with Nunes and Salah either side of him. I think he's better at the press, and he's more likely to score a goal. And I say this, I've been impressed by Gakpo the last couple of weeks, but in an ideal world,
I think we're sticking with largely the same team. We made the substitutes. I know the Darwin Nunes injury thing will taint a lot of what we're trying to do there, but it wouldn't shock me if he has the ability to do it again, that it's literally exactly the same team that started Newcastle. You start with Darwin, you start with Gakpo, and then you've got a Bobby Firmino who's a bit sharper and a Jota who's a bit sharper again to come on for another 30 minutes in that game. Bosh. I mean, I could just as easily flip those two around and be just as happy with that situation. But that's a really, I mean, nothing else. It's just a really good situation to be in. So we had some super chats. Ethsham Ulhassan, $4.99, says, I think we need at least a 3-goal lead to take back to Madrid.
Jesus. I'd take up one. Ashley
Frith says, do we think Bacetic will start?
Yes.
I do too. The lead stuff, I think, is, again, it's a little... I'd rather us just have a lead to take to the Bernabeu.
Yeah.
But there is something to, again, to mention Bayern Munich. This is where Bayern fucked it. It's because they came to Anfield when we had no Virgil van Dijk.
They thought
they were done. They thought 0-0, yeah. we've taken Liverpool's chance away. We don't lose at home. We're basically through here. And then...
Do you remember when away goals counted as more than just one goal? Wow, those were great times.
Yeah.
I think in this title, obviously, they don't. Because I'd be shocked if Madrid don't score.
I'm saying they don't score.
I'd be shocked.
I'd
be fucking shocked.
I've been at the bottom of the barrel going to all these away games, and look what 2 wins on the bounce has done to me.
Keeping out Benzema, we're keeping them all, I'll forget them. On the budget, it's thing to go back to it. It's incredible, really, to think, like, again, if you'd have said in before Christmas, right, you're playing Real Madrid in the Champions League, who's the first name in your midfield? Oh, yeah, Stefan Bajcetic. Oh, yeah, fuck off, mate. And he is. He has to play. Yeah. I think that's why Jürgen took him off. Well, it was why Jürgen took him off to look after him. It's whether he thinks Henderson and Fabinho can go again Saturday to Tuesday. I think he'll definitely want them to be able to do that. But
if he doesn't?
Milner.
I don't think it can be Elliot.
Which is why I said Milner, I think.
If they can't go, who else could it be?
Keita.
Oh, I forgot he was alive.
Worrying over nothing, you can absolutely do it. They've actually been trained to do it, and we haven't been playing too good.
I think they'd be fine to go.
Fabinho's my slight concern on this is because it didn't really get talked about, but their one big chance in the second half, Newcastle. His legs look like they're completely gone, and he's jogging back when he should be killing himself to get back in there. So I still have a little concern around him.
We've kind of up against him, kind of thing.
But I mean, again, he'd be fine for 60. But has he got enough to go the distance again?
He was the only one who did the other day, yeah. Which is interesting. Like, the was really trying to get the minutes into him. So yeah, but I don't know what Madrid's midfield's going to be. I'm guessing Camavinga, Modric. Probably Ceballos.
Really? I think Valverde is good on the wing.
He's been playing right, but he can move things around. But either way, it's a formidable ask to match up against. And you are right, legs are going to need it. So if you're Keita or you're Elliot, you probably know you're going to get half an hour of fresh legs, because I think that's got to be the plan to stay fresh again. But what's interesting is, like, if it's 0-0 after an hour, what's our approach? Are we going for that goal, or are we happy to... You know what I mean? That's why I think two-legged ties, especially without the away goal, are quite difficult to predict, because we don't know what Jürgen really thinks is a good result. We don't really know what Carlo Ancelotti thinks is a good result. Is Jürgen happy to go 0-0 at the Bernabeu and just go and have a one-off game there? Is Ancelotti happy to do what he wants? I don't know. My guess is, I think they're going to be quite reserved, and just presume that they'll play a player. And they've still got quality up front with a Benzema or a Vinicius or a Rodrigo or whoever it is to get your goal. So I think I actually don't think it's going to be a great game as a spectacle for, like, a neutral fan to watch. But obviously, it's Real Madrid at home in the Champions League. It's a huge occasion.
I think we're going to beat them 3-0.
2-0.
3-0.
Yep. I have a Man City feel about it. I don't know what it is.
I think 1-1.
I'm going 2-0.
I'm closer to stay on this. In the same way that I'd be shocked if Real Madrid didn't score, I'd be shocked if Real Madrid could keep us out.
Yeah.
Well, they've got the fucking goalkeeper.
Oh, yeah.
Mate, him against us, it's just something about him.
If he could get injured in the next 24 hours, that'd be great.
He's been injured for a while, hasn't he? Been kind of getting back.
I'm gonna go 2-1 to Liverpool.
I don't know. But we all probably look like absolute mugs because what's the box bottle happen, but 2-0.
Point. I think people mistake they think the realists when they're not the pessimists. And I think, you know, we've all got a lot of misery in our lives. Yeah. The world is a fucking absolute cesspit. But Liverpool have won 2 games of footy and we're dead good in Europe and we're at Anfield. They've had Benzema's been in and out with injuries all season long. If you're saying they've had issues with the goalkeeper and all that kind of stuff, both of these teams are capable of taking the game away from the other. Yeah. But again, it's Anfield. If you don't think we can beat Real Madrid at Anfield, then I don't think people have been paying attention. You know, it's.
I think we can, and I'm hopeful we can, but I just don't think we will. And by the way, a draw isn't a bad result. It's not a bad result. You'd want to take a lead there, but. There's a well where you're out of tie,
yeah.
So that's the flip side of it. But Chris is right before, like, this game is going to go down to the last half an hour of the burn. About this tie is in general
3-0 at Anfield, 1-0 to Liverpool in the Bernabeu.
Oh God, don't ask me about the Bernabeu. Jesus Christ, 1-0 to them at the Bernabeu, 2-0 at Anfield.
Europe is on note. Like let's do the Leverkusen thing again and just do 3-1 both legs. That'd be absolutely sad.
No, we're
going to Istanbul anyway, aren't we?
So how have we turned this away from around that you're predicting 1-0?
So what, we're on 100% away form run at the moment, Chris.
I'm hopeful you're right.
I'm optimistic.
I presume you're wrong.
I just again look at the teams we've beaten.
Everton and Newcastle.
No. I mean, in general,
fucking shit.
In general, we've been sound against teams, and there's been with the extenuating circumstances. I would suggest around Arsenal away from home when Diaz.
Can I send Napoli away back into your face as a pet? Like the worst performance I've ever seen from Liverpool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in general, not just away. I think we've played a good game. We've played good games of footy against good teams this season. I just don't relax.
I'm all for the
don't
game.
Don't let your own fears get on top
of you. I'm scared of fucking Real Madrid.
You are terrified.
I'm a little scared of Real Madrid.
If you said to me, like, put your out on who goes through, I'd be hand on heart. I thought Real Madrid are obviously the favourites. Like,
so you put your house on Real Madrid.
I wouldn't now. If I had to, then. If someone said to me, like, gun to your head, you're going to get shot if you get this wrong, I probably would pick Real Madrid.
Betting really high money.
Why wouldn't you? Everything about it, but there are a lot of factors. Worse Liverpool teams have done better in Europe. There's just, I'll be honest, you might be right, it might be a fear thing. There's something about that team and that fucking white kit and those players. Time and time again, I always say, we'll run rings around Modric and I can't wait for Salah to get in behind whoever it's Marcelo or it's Alba. And they just fucking beat us. And maybe I'm just like worn down by it because they are, but like, I hope Liverpool aren't feeling that way. I hope the support's in the ground like yourselves who are going to be there, obviously. I'm feeling that way.
I like the fact that this what about this game is and where Liverpool thrive is that thing of they're going to come trying to take something from us, and they're trying to take a win at Anfield, they're trying to take a place in the European Cup, and they're also trying to take our resurgent happiness away from us. And I love it when you try and take things off Scousers. I love it when you try and take things off our fan base. That's when we get really angry, and that's when we get really good in those kind of environments. But yeah, why not be possible? I can sit here and tell you how good Real Madrid are, but like, what's the fucking point of that? Well done. They've won a million European Cups. Great. They don't win it every year. Let's say that first.
Every other year, however.
Every time they play us this season, yeah.
I think I go back to that thing. We played them in the knockouts was the COVID season, and that game came just too soon.
Do you know what? It makes me laugh when we haven't actually done it today, but normally everyone goes, I'd rather have them over two legs than one. Why do they get through all the two-legged ties to win the one-legged ties?
They're really
like
good.
They actually win more two-legged ties than the one-legged ties.
Remember like when we used to do the thing like, someone in Corrie got married or like the Pope changed or whatever.
Yeah.
And that means Liverpool are going to win a European Cup. They just think when we play Liverpool, we just win the European Cup. That's what they're thinking now. Yeah. So we've got to, I really hope, and I don't know if you, I'm not sure about this players, but I wonder if there is any, especially, I saw it with Salah at last year's final, obviously going back to what happened in Kiev as well. Like, it felt like there was a bit of a mental block there, and he was talking. He was very un-Mo Salah-like before the game, like revenge and all that. We've heard none of that so far. Jürgen kind of downplayed it in the press conference as well. Of course, he was very, rightly so, he's praising Real Madrid. So I do wonder if there's been a mindset approach, a change. Like, what we tried so far against these clearly hasn't worked because they keep beating us. We
haven't, so let's try and be shit all season. Play possum, and then fucking batter them.
Mate, under Klopp, we haven't even been in the lead in a game against them. Never mind beat them. So like... there does have to be a mentality shift. I wonder.
My point, sorry, on this, two games is that I ascribe to that only in so much in finals. You just don't want Real Madrid in a European Cup final because, and like the way that every other team pretty much doesn't want us in a final because it's like Spurs rocked up like, well, let's just have a great day out because we're not gonna beat Liverpool. Well, it's just nice to be here, isn't it? Like competition winners. Is Real Madrid, everyone has that against Real Madrid in finals, whereas Real Madrid get knocked out in knockout stages all the time.
Like, I mean, not all the time. They won like four or six years.
They get knocked out well more than they win the European Cup. You know what I mean? That's my point.
Not over the last decade.
Yeah.
They've won well more two-legged ties than one-legged finals.
They're not, like you say, their away form in this competition this season against the group stage shows where how much they give a toss, but like, they're not unbeatable. It's just, if this was Liverpool at the peak of their powers, I'd be nervous. I would, because it's Real Madrid and it's Anfield. Like, this Liverpool side, they're starting to earn our trust back, but also they're not. I feel like we're still a bit battered and bruised by the whole season. It'd be interesting to see the reaction to two games a week as well. Chris made a great point before. It's the first time since what? When's the last time we played? The Wolves replay, really, that we've had to go back-to-back-to-back with games. It'd be interesting to see how Liverpool can go.
Do you know what? And I don't want to sound stupid, but this feels like what it did before Barca and we were down 3-0. It feels like we're so heavily an underdog at the moment in time, and I need that. I need that to get behind them. I can get behind that. Am I expecting... I obviously hope, and I'm being optimistic, and I'm saying that Liverpool will win, but there's very much a large part of my mind that's thinking, you're up against Real Madrid, all the best, good luck, but it's Real Madrid.
We very rarely find ourselves in that position.
But I can get behind it because there's something that makes me think you might as well go for it. You've got to go for it, and it's at Anfield first. That's what we really need to get behind.
Yeah, 100% on that. Completely agree on that. Their boss, and so
bring them on. I hope that's how the players are thinking. Right, fucking bring it on. We earn this. We've been excellent in the Champions League this season. The first game aside, 15 points, excellent. With the fact that we're playing them in the first place is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
You know, 15 points and you're not top of your own group. Brilliant, like that, the way that worked out well. But like, bring it. There shouldn't be no fear.
And the kind of general point on this is that. We've got our one game at a time mentality. We're very tentatively turning the season around. I can see a world now where Liverpool do go on a run and everyone remembers, oh God, no, this is Liverpool. This is Liverpool, aren't that? Because it's mad. Because it still boils down to all of our points we made all this season. It's insane that we've been as bad as we have been.
You shouldn't be
because we still have the players who are capable of doing the things. You need to get a bit lucky with injuries and fitness and you need to manage that better. But we lost them 1-0. And again, we'll never know, but that Champions League final was... The game of football was irrelevant to what had happened around it. There were other things going on in that.
And the goalie was incredible.
It was one of them. I don't think Real Madrid weren't miles better than Liverpool in the Champions League final, and they're not having an ideal season off the back of things either way. We're more than capable of beating them.
If Thibaut Courtois could run out of his box and handle the ball
while the ball bounced off his face,
I'll take that.
If he could just not play, I'd also enjoy that.
He's probably going to play. I hope he's not in Mo Salah's head.
I hope Mo Salah turns up and I don't want to see him talking in the newspapers or anything either.
Yeah.
As soon as he did that last season, I thought to myself, why have you done that? Like, why have you done that?
Because Dexy Lovren's his best mate.
They sent Cody Gakpo out today.
Yeah.
So that's a good move, that.
Yeah, it's smart.
Yeah.
Unless he ran his mouth, in which case, no, not smart.
Yeah, we're going to body them left, right, and centre. These are crap, these. I'm waiting for that. You know when the game's going your way, when I hear the first chant on the cop, or Sheldon the cop, get into these are shit, these. Yeah. And I guarantee we get that within 25 minutes of this football match.
25 seconds, probably.
Just don't concede in the first 15 to 20 see where we're at with it. And why not? Okay, cool. Loads more to come from us today. We're going to be reviewing the weekend's action from the Premier League. We're going to be having a good old laugh again at the expense of Chelsea Football Club. Ah, they're fucking rubbish. We're going to be talking about them. We're going to be talking about Arsenal and some title winning form, kicking the ball off the back of a goalkeeper's head to get a win at Villa Park. Very, very title winning ish. And a whole host of other things as well. Everton winning football matches, wild. Come and join us on the Biased Football Podcast. It will be streaming live pretty much straight after this over on RedmenPlus.com. But it's going to be us picking apart, having a laugh at teams we don't like, which is always good fun indeed. If you go over there and sign up right now, if you click on the Club Captain subscription and use the code Biased, BIASED in caps, you'll get a discount on your subscription.
£2 a month for 3 months.
£2 a month for 3 months.
£6. Usually costs you a fiver for 1 month.
There you go.
What a deal.
Yeah, brilliant. Come and join us. It's good fun indeed. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chloe. Thank you, Steve. And thank you to everyone who's commented live with us or after the fact. You guys are all boss. Come and get more Red Men coughing in your life over on RedmenPlus.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.